May it please the court, I'm Sean Connolly, together with Deborah Sloan and Jason Lynch, represent the appellant online travel companies, or OTCs. Expedia and the other OTCs are travel intermediaries that facilitate room reservations between a traveler seeking a hotel room in Denver and a hotel room in Denver providing and furnishing the lodging the traveler is seeking. The ultimate question presented here is whether Denver's half-century-old lodger's tax, actually dating back to 1950, should be extended for the first time beyond the hotels that actually furnish the lodging. We contend that under the plain language, there are three questions that must be answered in favor of the city for this extension to occur, and those answers cannot be answered in favor of the city. Questions essentially are who, when, and what. First, who? Who is the vendor, quote vendor, as defined in the code, responsible for remitting the lodger's tax to the city? We contend that the vendor is always the hotel furnishing the lodging and not the OTCs. The city contends exactly the opposite, that the only vendor in these transactions are the OTCs and not the hotels.
Well, isn't the mechanism under the merchant model that, for lack of a better term, the OTCs buy low and sell high?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. They don't buy anything. The model is that they request room reservations from the hotels at the request of a traveler, and the hotel confirms whether it's available or not, and then the hotel books the room, and the confirmation makes clear that the room is being confirmed by the hotel. The model Your Honor talked about, and that's how the city would like to portray it, would be in the sales tax kind of model. It would be as if they're selling something. This is not selling anything. This is not a sales tax. This
well, they retain the money. The OTCs retain the money until the lodger checks out. Isn't that correct?
Oftentimes, it can happen either way, but the record is oftentimes that they will remit the money to the hotel after checkout. That's correct.
Okay. So they have the time value of the money during the interview.
Depending on the models. That's not always true, but sometimes that's the case, yes.
Depending upon models or depending upon the contract?
Depending on the contract. And depending on the type of reservation, whether it's prepaid or otherwise, there are other variants of that. I don't think that's a uniform practice. But the first question that we think the court has to answer, and we think there are three, that's really going to the kind of what. What's the tax base? We think the first question that has to be answered is the who. Who is the vendor? And that has to be answered by application of the Denver Code. And under DRMC 53-170, parent 8, a vendor is a person who makes sales or furnishes lodging. And the fundamental dispute between the parties, the very first fundamental dispute is, does a vendor have to furnish lodging under the code to be a vendor?
Well, aren't you arguing that the vendor has to own and actually provide the space?
Absolutely not. We're saying the vendor has to furnish lodging, pure and simple. And that's not something we're making up, that's something the code says. And that's 170-8 says sale or furnish of lodging. And we suggest that under 170 parent 4, sale is the furnishing of lodging, so that the plain language definition of a vendor is one who furnishes lodging.
Mr. Connolly, if I understand your position correctly, you're saying that the terms sell and furnish are basically the same. Is that correct?
They're synonyms, as defined by the city's code.
So if they're synonyms, then what is your response to the city's argument that normally we use the rule of construction that when there are different words, everyone is given a different meaning?
That's not a variable, Your Honor. I think that the Swain case we cited in our brief by the Colorado Supreme Court says sometimes a list of words is synonyms. The best example is probably one that the court has to deal with repeatedly, Olano, in terms of plain errors. It's in the federal rules and the same in the state rules in terms of plain error. As the court well knows, it covers a plain error or defect affecting substantial rights. The argument was made before Olano that defect must be something different than error for the very same rule of construction that the city argues here. Supreme Court held, and this court and Supreme Court have said the same, that they are really synonyms. Error and defect really mean the same thing.
So if we have two opposite or conflicting rules of interpretation, on what basis should we decide whether your interpretation or the city's interpretation applies here?
According to the definition of the code. And the code says, if it said simply sale or furnishing lodging, we said they mean the same thing, we'd have an uphill battle. But we have an easier battle because you look at 170 parent 4, and it says sale is the furnishing of lodging. So it's expressly defined. So I would suggest that it's not even a canon of construction. I think you just apply the dictionary definition, not even dictionary definition, the code definition in 170 parent 4. And to do otherwise, you'd be ignoring the definition in 174. But alternatively, our contention is, if you think it could be read either way, and we don't think it can be, we think the most natural way is plain language of 170 parent 4. If you think that, well, I'm not sure if I should take the Alano approach or this other kind of construction approach, the default rule in these tax cases is you apply strictly against the city. And that's lean tree and that's transponder. And if there's any plausible reading in our favor, then that has to be given effect because it has to, tax obligations are not construed broadly or by implication. It's only as specifically prescribed by the tax code. And in our situation, we think the plain meaning of vendor is one that furnishes a lodging. And we think that's not only plain under the code, it's also plain as a matter of historical practice. It's in the 64 years now that this code has been enacted, that's the only way it's been applied to the vendor. The city wants to essentially rewrite.
Mr. Connolly, yes. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, please, Your Honor.
I want to ask you about an answer you gave to Judge Roy. Is it possible, in your view, for a business to furnish lodging if that business doesn't physically operate the hotel or similar establishment?
Thanks for the clarification. Our point is not that you have to be an operator. Some other ordinances say you have to be an operator. Our position is you have to be a furnisher. And I think the person on the ground furnishing lodging, we suggest the plain meaning of that is when you check in and are provided a room key, that's when you're furnishing lodging. So it's not a matter that you have to be the operator per se, you have to be the furnisher. The person on the ground furnishing the lodging is the hotel in these situations. The OTCs have no power to furnish lodging. They, as I mentioned to Judge Roy, simply make a request to the city, make a request to the hotel. The hotel confirms availability or not, and then the reservation is booked in the name of the hotel. So I think that in terms of vendor, the first position is that OTCs are not vendors, only the hotel is a vendor. And the second issue, I think, which maybe touches on Your Honor's question, or at least I'll try to segue into that, is that the second question is when. When is the taxable event? And the taxable event, as defined in the code, is, and that's section 171A, is upon the privilege of purchasing lodging in Denver, in the city. And so that taxable event could be read, and this is could be read, purchase could be mean, when does the, and this is the city's position, when does the customer, the traveler, pay money to an intermediary, right? Is the lodging purchase? That's the position they would like to argue. We think that that's at odds, again, with this definition of purchase, and it's in the same section 170, parent 4, that defines sale. Purchase is the acquisition of lodging. And so it's not just in a colloquial sense of when is something purchased. Purchase requires the acquisition of lodging. It's our position in terms of the when question that the taxable event occurs when a traveler is acquired lodging, and that it comes when it's furnished to the traveler, and that the only person that can give lodging to the person, to the traveler, is the hotel and not the OTC.
Isn't the measure of the tax, or isn't the tax imposed upon the lodger? And is not the measure of that tax what the lodger paid to stay in the hotel?
Yes, under the statute, it is, you're correct, Your Honor, it is imposed on the lodger. And the measure of it, and that's kind of our third point, the what question that you only get to if you answer the who and the when in their favor, but in terms of the what question, it's upon the purchase price paid for the furnishing of lodging.
In a rough example, the room normally, the rack rate is $200. One of the OTCs buys it for $150 and sells it for $200. Yeah. I realize you don't, but the only person who knows what the lodger is paying for the hotel is the OTC and the lodger.
Well, I guess there's a lot of premises packed into that question. Let me try to unpack the first one if I could, Your Honor. It is not a matter, and I think this is where I tried to take issue with your questions the first time, it's not a matter of the hotel buying it at $150 and selling it at $200. That's not how it works. There's a singular charge done in terms of the hotel sets the rate it's going to do. Now, in terms of the third question, the what, really the question is the OTC providing services that are not directly connected with the furnishing of lodging? And that's under 171 B and C, because that's the assessment of where it is. So the question, I think, under the third what question, what's the tax base, is are there services being provided by the OTC that they are being compensated for that are apart from the furnishing of lodging? And our position is that because only the hotel can furnish lodging, that the OTC is not engaging in the business of furnished lodging, and that the services that a customer is paying for when they say, I want to book a reservation through an OTC, is twofold. I mean, threefold, actually. You're paying the rate to the hotel that the hotel is demanding to provide a room. That's number one. Number two, you're providing compensation, service fees, and markup for the OTC's services. You are making a choice when you go through Expedia or Priceline or Travelocity or any one of the OTCs that I'm going to pay for their services. I have the choice. I can book directly with the hotel and not pay those service fees, but I'm making a choice to travel to do that. And then the third thing is that you're paying a tax recovery charge. You're paying the taxes that tend to go to the hotel. And obviously, there's no question that in these cases, the hotels, the vendors in our view, have paid everything that the city says that they owe. The question is there compensation, the services charged for and compensated for by the travel to the OCs, is that within the tax base? If I could give maybe a simple example.
Mr. Connolly, if I can interrupt you real quick. Sure. On your when question, the taxable event, if a customer is in Texas and wants to book a hotel at Denver downtown Marriott, and they go to the Marriott website directly and they purchase a hotel reservation via the Marriott's website, is that not a taxable event at that point?
Yeah, we submit it's not, Your Honor. This taxable event, we think.
But they collect taxes at that point, don't they, from the traveler?
Well, they may, but they don't owe at that point. The remittance is after the acquisition of lodging. We submit that and it can happen either way. It shouldn't matter if it's prepaid or not. If it's not prepaid, a lot of reservations, maybe most, I can't say that, but certainly a good number of reservations are not prepaid. You book a reservation with the hotel, and you'll say cancellation up till 6 p.m. date of arrival. In that case, nobody's contacting as a taxable event, and we think the analysis should be the same because the code says the acquisition. You've not acquired lodging, even though you have a reservation in the non-prepaid situation, nor have you acquired it in the prepaid situation. We think the analysis is the same, so the tax is payable after this day.
And so, Mr. Connolly, if your credit card, if somebody is purchasing a room, to use Judge Navarro's example, and his or her credit card is charged, what does the person obtain at that point if it's not lodging?
It obtains an expectancy that it's going to be provided lodging, maybe contractual right that it'll be provided lodging, but it doesn't have lodging. Lodging is the acquisition and furnishing of a room. And when I have a reservation in the future date, July 4th, I booked a reservation to stay in the downtown Marriott, I don't have any right to a room at that point. I have not been furnished a room. And again, I think it's a matter of the code's language. And it's not a matter of just colloquially, do you think you have a right to a room? The code's language is that you have not been furnished lodging at that time.
So your view then is, even if somebody in that hypothetical thinks that he or she is purchasing a room, that the person is in the code's terms not acquiring it until the person actually is given a room key?
That's exactly our position in terms of the when question. Yes, sir. And if I can reserve the remaining 2 minutes of my time.
Okay, very well. Thank you, Mr. Connolly.
Good afternoon. My name is Andrew Volk. I'm here on behalf of the city. I'd like to hand up just a few pages from the record because I think they go directly to the questions that you're asking, which I think go to the heart of this issue. And these are all pages from the record.
Have you shared those with your opposing counsel? Okay.
On the who question, who is the vendor? I would just note that the vendor is the one that collects the money from the purchaser, and it's undisputed that the purchaser, the OTC's purchasers, and the OTCs don't dispute that. They collect the tax from the purchaser every time they get their credit card.
And Mr. Volk, I noticed you use some terms to define vendor that are not in the definition of vendor in the ordinance. Could you relate your argument to the language of the definition of vendor from the ordinance?
Sure. The ordinance says that under DRMC 53173B, vendor required to collect the tax from the purchaser at the time of making the sale. At the time the vendor makes the sale, they collect the taxes. And that the only time anyone collects money from the purchaser is at the time of the sale. And they have acquired lodging at that point, as defined in the ordinance, which is the right to use rooms. And under Welby Gardens, you construe a tax ordinance no different than any other. You go by the plain meaning, and if you can determine the plain meaning, you don't resort to any other canons of interpretation, and we submit it's not.
Well, Mr. Volkan, can you tell us what your view is of the meaning of the word furnishing lodging?
Certainly, Your Honor. I think that furnishing, in the dictionary definition cited by both sides, and it's been used by this court, I believe, is the provision of something that is desired. They're providing the purchaser with something that's desired, namely the right to use a room. And it's not some vague and abstract expectancy. If you look at page 4 of my handout, this is AR3913. This is what you get when you book with Orbitz. This is for a Denver room. Purchase confirmation. You've made a purchase. Well, what is it that you've purchased? The right to use lodging. And significantly, if you make this purchase and you don't show up, but you don't cancel, you don't get your money back. The city gets its tax. The taxable event occurs when you make the purchase. If it's a prepaid transaction, virtually all Priceline opaque model transactions are prepaid, the taxable event is clearly through. But in any case, you paid for the right, you've acquired the right. If you don't use that right and you cancel, you get your money back and the tax reverts back, just as if...
Well, doesn't that undercut what you're arguing? If you get a refund, doesn't that suggest that no taxable event has happened yet? Otherwise, why would you get your money back?
I would analogize to this, Your Honor. If I buy my wife clothes, and I kind of expect she's going to return them, but when I go in there, I owe the tax. No doubt I owe the tax. I pay the full value and the tax. If the store makes a quarterly tax or monthly tax payment, they get the tax, because at that point, she's acquired the right to use those clothes. She's got possession of those clothes. She chooses not to use them. She returns them. The transaction is undone. It's no different here. If you look at the typical hotel contracts, and again, the definition of lodging says to a person who, for consideration, has received the right to use. That's what they get when they make this transaction, the right to use. And of course, it's the first time it's been applied to this business model. This business model didn't come into being 50 or 60 years ago. It came into being in 2003. If you look at page 9 of my handout from the Travelocity contract, it occurs to me I'm not going to read this contract because I'm not certain if it may be considered confidential, but the import of this highlighted language and speaks of the sale of rooms. They make the sale of rooms. It says the rooms are guaranteed. It says if you show up, you'll get the room. Where on its invoice does any of these OTCs tell their customers, you're not getting anything. If the hotel feels like giving you room, we can. They now classify themselves as mere intermediaries, but if you look at Expedia's filed under Sarbanes-Oxley in the record, their SEC filings, they say, in the merchant model, we are not mere intermediaries. We go beyond that. We control this. We set the price, which these contracts will show they set the price, and we sell the rooms. They changed the terminology in response to litigation, but we submit they talked about selling lodging in the same way that the ordinance talks about selling lodging.
Is there any limit on the price they can charge for the room? If the normal rack rate is $200, they buy it for $150, and I realize they object to that characterization, but they buy it for $150, can they rent it for $500?
In theory, they could. There's a couple of things to note. A lot of the agreements have what's called parity agreements, so they agree that they're not going to charge less than what the hotel charges. So there's a downward. They can't charge less than because the hotels don't want to lose the ability to sell rooms. In theory, they could charge more, but if you look at the examples and the invoices I gave, the ones in the record for the same room on the same night, lo and behold, they tend to charge about exactly the same.
Mr. Volk, I wanted to ask you a question to clarify historically what has been the practice, because you said just a few minutes ago that this was a new procedure using online travel companies. Let's say we had somebody who wanted to rent or make a reservation for a Denver hotel 30 years ago and went to a travel agency and paid the travel agent for the room. My recollection from the briefs is that there was never any tax imposed on travel agents for any commission or compensation the travel agency received. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor, and it's a good question. It's a so-called agency model. And in the agency model, what the travel agent does is forwards the information to the hotel. The hotel takes the money from the traveler and then pays separately a commission to the travel agent. It's not part of the cost of the room. The cost of the room is exactly what the hotel would charge you, whether you call them up or whether the travel agent facilitated the transaction.
And the tax, if any, is collected at that time by the hotel?
By the hotel. And on their full rate, plus if the hotel decides to take part of its profit and call it a service fee, they'd be taxed on that as well. On the what, we think it's very clear the total purchase price excludes the price paid for any goods, services, commodities other than those directly connected with and included in the price of the furnishing of rooms or accommodations. There's no question that you have to pay every dime of these charges in order to buy a room from the OTCs.
But is that also true that the traveler could get the same room from the hotel without paying any fees to the OTC whatsoever?
They could, and then the hotels will collect the full tax. But we submit we're talking about the transactions that the OTCs are conducting.
But isn't a consumer who obtains a room through an OTC actually, in effect, paying for the services that the OTC provides in terms of access to the website and not just the information about that particular hotel, but comparative information about hotels, maybe pictures of the hotels, information about the amenities a particular hotel would have?
We submit no, Your Honor, because, and here's why, on any website, on a books, on Amazon.com, on a you can walk into a Kmart, you can look around, you can comparison shop, you can take advantage of all that, but you're only charged when you buy something. And all those charges are part of what you're paying for the room. I'm only being charged for the room. They're making their profit out of all their charges and so forth, but everybody has a website, and I don't think people evade tax that way in any other industry that I'm aware of.
Well, but isn't there a difference between somebody making a hotel reservation directly with the downtown Marriott, to use Judge Navarro's example again, on the one hand, as opposed to going through an OTC and spending time looking at comparative prices and comparative locations and comparative amenities?
I think from the ordinances standpoint, there's no difference. You're purchasing a room, you're paying mandatory charges, and you know, you can book on these websites for free if you want. You can spend all day looking on them and then buy the rooms wherever you want. But when you actually make a transaction, when you actually have the acquisition of lodging, which is what's covered by the ordinance, then the taxes are due, and they're due on everything except those, and they're doing everything that's directly connected with and included in the price of, as distinguished from items that are optional, which are clearly not covered by the lodging tax. Of renting a movie, ordering room service, those items are not covered by the lodger's tax, but we think that everything that's a mandatory cost you have to pay in order to obtain the room is clearly covered by the total purchase price.
Now the OTCs, in effect, collect from the lodger the tax.
That's correct.
To the extent of what they are paying for the room, or what they are sent, the money they're sending the hotel, the 150 plus 10 point whatever percent taxes, that's what they send to the hotel.
That's correct.
And what about the OTCs are not licensed vendors for sales tax purposes or for this tax purpose, are they?
They are not.
So they're not authorized to collect the tax.
Well, it's interesting because there's a couple of ways in which, you know, the purchaser is supposed to pay the tax to the hotels. I don't think the OTCs argue they're purchasers, as they're quick to point out they don't acquire the right to use the room. Nobody thinks that if I book a room through Orbis gets to stay in my hotel room. And so I'm not certain how they would read it, but how I would read it is, yes, they're the ones who the tax is collected from are the purchasers. Tax is also supposed to be separately itemized. They don't do that. They bundle it together with their service fees, so you can't unpack how much is tax and how much is service fees. So that's correct, Your Honor. We think that, however, they do nonetheless have taken on the role of vendor, which they now disown, because they collect the tax. The vendor is the one who collects the tax. They've just said, well, if we call part of our money the base rate and we call part of it something else, we can pick and choose what gets taxed and what doesn't. And we think that's plainly against the language and the intent of the ordinance.
Mr. Volk, let me ask you about the language of vendor again, which means making sales of or furnishing lodging. I think you said earlier that it's your position that OTCs are furnishing lodging because they provide something that's desired. I know obviously the OTCs have a different view that only the hotels furnish lodging, and that happens when the purchaser checks in. And there are a number of authorities from around the country that support the OTC's interpretation of what it means to furnish lodging. Nonetheless, do you think the OTC's view, and by implication the view of these courts, is entirely unreasonable?
And again, I think it's important to stress, Your Honor, as every court I think has stressed, each statute must be read, these ordinance must
okay,
be read as well.
Okay, just about my question. Do you think it's entirely unreasonable to think that the OTC's position is correct?
I do think it's unreasonable because under their position, as counsel even slipped up, only hotels are ever liable for this tax. If the drafters wanted the vendor to be limited to the hotel or an operator, they would have said so. They didn't say so. They said any person. They also said any person can furnish. They didn't say only a hotel can furnish, which would make sense. Only the hotel or the person managing the hotel could furnish if their view is correct. And I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry about that.
Nope,
the Myrtle Beach Court construed furnishing to include the provision of rooms, and other courts have as well.
Was that the United States District Court for South Carolina?
Yes, it was.
That was interpreting the South Carolina ordinance?
Yes, it was.
Didn't the later South Carolina Supreme Court decision have a different interpretation of the same ordinance?
The later Supreme Court that had a similar language, and I'm not sure if it was the identical ordinance, right, came to the same result, again, based on all the language of that statute, where they found the OTCs were engaged in the business of furnishing, which we submit the OTCs are here as well. But again, the dictionary definition and the term it's not defined. And I think that when the difference between using or to mean the same thing, defect or error, those mean the same thing. Sale and furnish, different things. One involves the exchange of money, right? And the receipt of something. Here, a confirmation saying, you got the right to use this room. And the other typically doesn't have that connotation. I think in those circumstances, it's illogical to suppose an identical meaning.
But don't we have to ignore the definition of sale in the ordinance in order to agree with me?
Definition of sale in
which
the
means
ordinance
to furnish lodging?
Well, sale, well, then you have to ignore the definition of lodging and acquire and purchase, which is part of the same definition.
But how so? How so? Explain that, please.
Because lodging includes the right to use a room. And purchase means to sell or acquire. Purchase means to furnish or acquire. We can assume the purchaser isn't the one who's furnishing. So the purchaser must be the one who's acquiring.
So the vendor is the one who's furnishing.
Yes.
So my question is, if sales defined to furnish lodging, how do we interpret making sales to mean anything other than furnishing lodging?
I have to concede that point, Your Honor. But again, I think that the...
Excuse me, you conceded that point? I didn't quite hear.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, no, when you word it that way. But again, I urge you in interpreting the term furnish and all the terms of this ordinance, you look to all the terms of the ordinance and give them all sensible effect. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Volk.
Your Honor, I think that last concession is fatal to the city's case. If they concede, as I think the ordinance requires, that a vendor must be one who furnishes lodging, then at the very least, if we don't have the better of it, I think we do have the better of it, we at least have a reasonable interpretation. As Judge Navarro pointed out, City of Birmingham, the Alabama Supreme Court said OTCs don't furnish lodging. The case they rely on heavily, the South Carolina Supreme Court case, Travelscape, said they don't furnish lodging. The hearing officer, Mr. Speckman, whose impartiality we've challenged, said technically the OTCs are correct, that they don't furnish lodging. I think we have the better of that, but we certainly have a plausible and a reasonable view of that, and under that, ambiguity has to be resolved against the city.
Is that a finding of fact or a conclusion of law?
I think that's a conclusion of law. What does it mean to furnish? And I think you have to say, does furnish mean that you sell something or that, you know, what do we do that constitutes furnishing? There's no dispute about what we do. We don't, although I do dispute the you know, the characterization, it's a sale or not, and I'll get to that in a moment, but in terms of, and that doesn't go to the vendor, Your Honor. The, you know, in terms of what we do, you're questioning the part that I guess we've respectfully disagreed as an advocate, goes to the tax base. But in terms of the vendor, the very first thing, if you have to furnish, at the very least, there's a question of do we furnish? And we suggest we don't. The second thing, the city likes to construe this as a sales ordinance, and I think Your Honor, in some respects, has said, kind of, we buy it at wholesale, sell at retail. The fundamental difference between buying a clothes, whether it's for yourself or a spouse or anybody else, you're getting what you pay for. When you hand over $100 for a pair of pants or a jacket or anything else, you're getting that. You get that at the time, the transaction's over. If you then later return it, you're unwinding the transaction. Here, as the city's conceded, it's not owed when it's canceled. That's because it never happened. You never got what you paid for. And so for those reasons, we'd ask you to reverse the district court and hold that there's no liability imposed on OTCs under this 64-year-old lodger's tax. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Connolly. Thank you, Mr. Volk. Mr. Volk, we appreciate your coming here from Seattle for the argument. Ms. Sloan, we appreciate your coming from Dallas. I'm not sure if you're co-counsel from here or from out of state.
Home sweet home,
okay. Okay, well, we appreciate those of you who have come. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.